You are now listening to a member of the Disney Podcast family. Head over to Disney Podcast Family on Instagram to see all the latest posts for this show and links to other great Disney podcasts.
Welcome, dreamers and believers. You're listening to Imagine That, a Light in the Window production.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Imagine That. We are the Imagineers that don't work for Disney, but sharing all things Disney for Mr. Alias himself. If you know, you know. If you don't, go back and please watch that episode.
And episode one,
That was episode one. Bringing Mr. Alias to the screen is Sam. Sam, how are you doing?
I am good. I'm super excited for tonight's episode. I always say I'm excited. I'm excited every time I get to talk to you guys. You're my people.
And speaking of Sam's people, we are joined by Kevin and Amanda. Amanda, how are you doing?
Well, Loris, I'm doing great.
Oh, okay.
If you know, you know.
If you know, go listen to episode three. Yes.
Isn't this episode three?
No, this is four.
Wow, I've lost count.
Number four. How's it going, Shrek? Pick number four, my lord. But we are here. Glad to be back. But we are also joined by our sponsors, Wear in the Park, which Kevin and Amanda, you guys will hear. But those listeners will hear about them later on the show. We are also sponsored by Getaway Today, our travel sponsors of the show, and Sunken City Designs, who will be joining myself. We'll be joining at Rogue Comic Con in May 4th. Are you guys all going? I think only half of us are, right?
Me. Kevin and Amanda aren't coming.
We're in the park team will not be there.
We'll be there in spirit.
Yes. I'll carry your picture in my pocket.
Oh, thank you.
We also want to give a huge thank you to our lamplighters, our Patreons. We appreciate everything you guys do. Sam, what do we got planned tonight?
Tonight we are going to talk about the sort of breaking, kind of meh, Disney president news. And because, I mean, we've heard about it a little bit before, but it is officially taking place. So we will get into that. We are going to do our Imagineering feature on Marty Sklar. And we are going to talk about how we could reimagine Galaxy's Edge using the first tier of the Imagineering pyramid that we discussed in last week's episode.
Yeah, I'm excited. I don't know if I'm excited more about the reimagineering or the Marty Sklar, because that right there is a deep topic for the man, the myth, and very much a legend.
You're not excited about the Disney president breaking news?
I mean, I'm excited for that too. I am excited for that. What were your guys' initial thoughts when Barbara? I'm just saying Barbara because I'm going to butcher her last name. I don't want to do it to her. She's already stepping up. Barbara B., what were you guys' initial thoughts hearing that she is stepping down? And actually, no, stepping, like, she's leaving. I don't think she's just stepping down. I think she's leaving Disney in general, right?
Yeah, she's out. I mean, the articles didn't specifically say where she was going. I don't think she elaborated on where she was going. I did think that it was interesting that everything is in the hands of Bruce Vaughn, who's the chief creative officer. I'm curious to see where the company goes from there. Will they bring in someone to co-lead that role as they've done in the past, or is everything in the hands of Bruce?
Yeah, I'm also, I mean, there seems like, so here in the article, it's sharing, I mean, I'm paraphrasing it, but it seems to point that there's like, she left on another happy note that she was. So it doesn't really express why or like whether it was creatively, financially. It just says citing tensions in the division. That's all it says. So that could be anything. For me, the part that really caught me off guard was the Bruce Vaughn, because, and I shared it in our chat, I thought he was already in that position because they made it like a big announcement at D23, the last one, that he was going to be the man. And come to find out, he wasn't. I'm excited to see what he does, because the pieces I saw in Imagineering story, especially when he talks about Hollywood Studios and Disneyland Paris, where like, oh, this is it. The fans will just get it. And he's like, what? So I'm excited to see what he brings. But at the same time, too, is he going to bring stuff that's, you know, that's what you're doing? Like, what else are you going to bring? So I'm really excited to see what he does. But one thing that stuck out to me, too, Barbara was only president for 2 years, or a little over 2 years. She initially got in the position in 2021, late 2021. So that's JPEG a very short put her in her position. What's that?
JPEG put her in her position then.
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I'm trying to figure out where math is over here. Because I want to say she got the job before JPEG took over. But I could be wrong.
Well, he got the job in 2020. And she took over in 2021.
No, JPEG took over in December of 21. At least that's the stuff I found. I could be wrong. Like, so I was trying to figure out the timeline on this. And
he
like,
took over, so he,
conflicting numbers.
He took over like a week and a half before COVID.
Yeah, so JPEG was out, it says, JPEG was ousted by Disney on board, Disney's board on November 20th and replaced by Iger, who was returning to the company helm after leaving in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah, it was March. It was March of 2020 when JPEG took over. So here's the thing: we all talked about on multiple occasions how JPEG and the decisions we thought that he was making, and we know it wasn't all him. It was decisions that had been made before him. Things were lacking creativity, and a lot of the things that people have seen in the past 2 years. We have felt, well, I'm not going to say we, I'm going to say I, from what I've read and seen, there are a lot of people that do feel the parks are stepping away from some of that immersive creativity. They have it in certain spaces, but it's not like all throughout an entire land. Like the, so going back to the pyramid that we talked about last week, the stories are starting to feel different. The full immersion into an entire land is starting to feel different. Yes, we have Galaxy's Edge, but you know, that was done before her time. And I'm hoping with Vaughn, like what I've heard of him saying in the Imagineering story, like Lewis said, he's incredibly passionate. He was like head of creativity essentially for Imagineering the past couple of years. So let's hope that can I be awful for a second? I'm kind of hoping that they were butting heads, that the two of them were butting heads. And then finally people were like, well, we can't have this and we like his ideas more. So we're going to put him in charge.
It is really interesting because we don't know what happened, you know.
This is Sam's speculation.
Yeah. But the article, the things that she had posted on her Instagram page, they all seem like things that had happened a while ago. So for this to come out of like, hey, I'm out, like, I feel like something must have happened behind the scenes that we don't know, to your point, that it might have been some internal conflict.
Didn't the article say tensions in the division?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but it also made reference to things like the Nona project and different things that have been well known, you know, years ago, that it just seems kind of one thing after another. And this was just kind of the final straw.
And I'm curious if it comes out of the, because right now Iger has openly shared, very openly, that, you know, we are doing too much of one thing and not the other. There was the interview end of last year, the one where the infamous one where Elon Musk basically told him to go and, you know, fuck off. And Iger was saing that, you know, we're forgetting the storytelling. We are doing too much of, he didn't use the word agenda, but he was basically saying that without saying that. And now in this last one that he just did about the superhero fatigue, I wonder if they are recognizing that, hey, our storytelling is lacking, is being substituted and not pushed. And I wonder if many of these, because they do have, I forget the acronym, they have the inclusion department, which was something that kind of came in out of, not out of nowhere, but has came in and driven stuff. And I wonder if Iger is saying, like, hey, it's not that we can't do that, but we have to do it in a very Disney way where the story, the everything blends together, where you're not eating a potato salad and you're tasting just potatoes, just egg, just the mayo. It becomes its own flavor. And for me, I wonder if that's why a lot of people are leaving, because it goes back to the original park days. No, this is my project. No, that's your project and stuff like that, where we are kind of getting back into that where, no, this is my project, and being very pushy with it. And people are not liking that when they have to share, like, no, this is what we need to bring it for the fans. So I wonder if that's what's causing her to push back and step down. Like, hey, this is what I'm doing, because he's now putting the pressure on the teams.
Well, so that brought me to another point. I've been reading another book called The Imagineering Way as well. And in that book, it is written by the Imagineers. They basically wrote these notes that somebody compiled into, like, they wrote essays that they compiled into a book, and it's about Imagineering. And it says in there that the Blue Sky Sessions, there's no such thing as a bad idea. Everybody is expected to participate. Everybody is expected to bring ideas. Everybody's supposed to throw things at the wall and see what sticks. And if people are not playing nice, because, like, as Lewis just said, if, you know, people are, like, trying to claim their projects for their own, that's not how Imagineering has ever worked in history. That's not how Blue Sky Sessions work. You have to be open-minded. You have to be willing to share the stage with other people who have maybe different creative inspirations, different creative styles, because that's what is going to ultimately bring you what's best for everyone. That's going to bring you the most cohesive experience for everyone, and bring you different perspectives, bring you different input that is very highly needed when you're creating something that costs so much dang money. Like, it has to be all hands on deck, and it has to be a team player game. So if you're not being a team player, or if your team is not playing well as a team and you have tried to redirect them and it's not working, I can imagine frustration arising from that.
So,
Evan, do you have anything you want to add to that? You've been quiet over there, friend.
I have been quiet. I've been trying to go over the timeline that I may have screwed up over here. Because we have so many steps that have happened along the way here, where you have Bob Weiss, who was running Imagineering, who took over for Bruce Baughn and Craig Russell, who were team leading back in 2016. Then Booza, or Barbara Booza, I believe her name is pronounced, came in June of 2020 after she was, I don't know who exactly reached out to her, if it was Bob Weiss or not, looking at her back in 2019 when she was in charge of Gensler, the architecture firm, wanting her to become part of the Imagineering team. She started as the president of business operations, design, and delivery. At that time, Bruce Baughn was working at Airbnb. At least he transferred over there during that time. And it's just kind of a weird thing where you have the whole Iger and Chapek kind of handover happening while all these different dominoes are falling. It gets us to today. So I don't know how much of it's going to be the same as usual over there with Bruce Baughn, or if it's going to be actually a big change. I don't know.
I think it also, with her coming over in 2020, I feel like, again, the team aspect. We talked about this on the Main Street View days. When you have a two, it works. Walt and Roy. Obviously, it was working really well. It had its difference. Frank Wells and Michael Eisner, it worked really well. So for me, I feel like the team part really works. But at the same time, you have to have two that have the same mindset, but very much different. I think, and Bruce Vaughn, he might bring that depending on who they bring. Bob Weiss was a legend. Really held it down and been with the company for a minute. So, like, he saw it grow. Like, it was in his veins. So I think, I wonder if that's another challenge they face, is by bringing people in that are really young, meaning employment-wise, and not really growing with the company. I mean, you look at a lot of the Imagineers we know today, they came in their high school ages. I mean, you look at Joe Rohde, you look at Bob Gurr, Baxter. I mean, these are guys that worked their ranks up from selling balloons and ice cream in the parks to now being an Imagineer. So I wonder if that's something, I mean, that's what Walt did, curating Imagineers, pulling guys from the studio. Can you really go to school to become an Imagineer? Probably not, because you can become an engineer, but when you add that imagination to it, you have to, like, be able to dream it and do it. Not to sound cheesy and steal lines, but I mean, it's kind of where you got to go with it. And some of these people that are coming in, I feel like they have the imagineering aspect on paper, but when it comes to the imagination part, they're very much lacking that.
I don't know all of Barbara's history, but I know that she did work for Gensler for about 18 years. And Bob Weiss currently works for Gensler. I didn't know he was an architect by education, at least. So he went over to Gensler, and when he went there, he said that he had worked with Gensler with Disney for so long that he felt like he really knew the corporate structure over there and he understood the company. So I don't know if he worked with Barbara before she came over through Gensler. I really don't know their personal history or her background as far as working with Disney, because apparently Disney used them as a architecture firm for years.
And to that point, how many people can do the reverse of that, where they have worked for an outside company but have worked so closely with Disney for so long that they understand the ins and outs of the corporation? But I wanted to throw out a question to the team, because this is Imagine That. Who is your dream team at the top?
How many?
Like, to take this role you were talking about,
there should be two on top. For the last year, it has been Barbara and Bruce co-leading the company. So I don't know if there was a conversation a year ago, because he signed in March, I think it was like 20th or 22nd of last year. So it's just under a year that she stepped down. But I don't know if there was a conversation they had saying, like, a year from now, I'll be taking over for you. I don't know.
Was it D23 or... No, I think it was Destination D23 that they announced Bruce Vaughn coming back. I don't think it was D23 now that I think about it. I think it was Destination D23, because we did a live video of watching that. I could be wrong, but maybe it's there too. For me, though, to answer Amanda's question, now, are we going current and alive, or are we just going all time?
I say current and alive. Make it hard.
Current and alive. Okay. That's hard, because I'm not familiar with the names, but I am going
to
go.
We could come back to this for our next episode. Use that as our show opener. You guys good with
I'm
that?
Down.
Yeah.
Amanda, gets us homework.
Yep. Put a pin in it, guys.
Amanda, will you write that down so we don't forget?
Absolutely. I'm on it.
So, and then one last thing I have for this, I would like to know what Barbara's report card was on Imagineering projects. What projects was not necessarily she responsible for, but what projects made their way into the parks or the resorts that were her signing off on?
I will try and do some research on that to bring to the next episode as well.
Okay.
And then we can reimagine our teams.
If she is responsible for dehydrating Splash, well.
We know where Lewis stands. Okay, so we're going with the top two then, right? President and then the chief creative officer. Is that what his role is? Sure, chief creative director. That's what it is. Okay.
I think it's chief creative officer, yeah.
Okay, well, CCO. I was right the first time. Okay, CCO. All right. So that's awesome. We have homework. I love these conversations because it allows us to dive deeper into a topic that we all love and just get excited about it and have these conversations. You guys ready for a break though? And we'll come back and talk about our Imagineer of the week, Marty Sklar. All right. Well, I think it's time to hear from Where in the Park, even though we've been hearing from them already today.
where in the park Seek and Find Image Scavenger Hunt games will have you exploring theme parks like never before. But this is not like your childhood scavenger hunts. There are no word-based lists of items to find or a binder of riddles, trivia, math, or counting. Our games contain cards with images of details that can be found throughout the park just by walking around. You can play on your own schedule, so you don't have to worry about long lines, height requirements, or health concerns. Need help finding an image? We've got you covered, with hints and answers on each card so you're never left wondering where in the park the image can be found. Use the Scan Before Playing card to reveal an alternate image if one of the cards in your pack is currently hidden or removed from the park. Order today to get game packs for your next visits to the Disneyland Resort and Walt Disney World theme parks. But the fun doesn't stop there. We also have games for Universal Studios in Hollywood and Florida, Knott's Berry Farm, Six Flags, SeaWorld, and more. Ready to experience your favorite theme parks in a whole new way? Go to www.whereinthepark.com/waltzaptpodcast to get 10% off your order. A portion of the sale will also go to support the Waltz Apartment Podcast. Want $10 off your order instead? Visit patreon.com/waltzaptpodcast to become a lamplighter. With so much more to discover, the only question is, do you know where in the park?
Yeah, we do know we're in the park. We're sitting right here with them right now. But go ahead, get yourself some packs. They're super fun. And Kevin and Amanda are incredible, and we're lucky to have them here. So, okay. All right. Are you ready for... I had to give Kevin a compliment after how I spoke to him on the live show. I'm just kidding.
It was very rude and uncalled for, but, you know, it's all love here.
It is. It's like, we're family. Like, you have to pick on each other. It's a means of survival. So we were thinking about storytelling after we recorded our last episode and paying attention to detail, which made us think about plussing. And that all brought us to our Imagineering selection of this episode, which is Marty Sklar, Imagineering legend, obviously. So I'm going to go ahead and read what I've prepared about Marty Sklar, and then we're all just going to chat about him and just get to know him. So, all right. Marty Sklar was born on February 6, 1934. He was a legendary figure in the realm of Disney Imagineering. His remarkable career spanned over 5 decades and left an indelible mark on the worlds of themed entertainment. Starting at Disney in 1955 as a writer for the Disneyland News newspaper, while still in college, Sklar quickly caught the eye of Walt Disney himself and rose through the ranks to become one of the key creative forces behind Disney's theme parks. His close collaboration with Walt and his unwavering commitment to storytelling and guest experience set him apart as a visionary leader in the industry. As he transitioned to the role of creative leader at Walt Disney Imagineering, Sklar played a pivotal role in the development of numerous iconic attractions, including the Enchanted Tiki Room, It's a Small World, and the original Epcot Center. Known for his attention to detail and his dedication to preserving Walt Disney's legacy, Sklar championed the philosophy of plussing, which emphasized the continual improvement and enhancement of attractions, which we're going to be talking about that tonight as we get into our armchair Imagineering, to provide guests with the best possible experience. His mentorship of young Imagineers and his passion for creativity and innovation served as a guiding light for the next generation of themed entertainment designers. I actually have a story I can share about that. And I may have shared this before, but I'm not sure. So Roger Holzberg was an Imagineer in California with Marty Sklar, and he got called to Marty's office. And Marty was his mentor at this point. Marty told him, "I'm sending you to Florida because I need you to build one man's dream." And Roger's like, "I don't want to go to Florida." Marty knew enough about Roger to sweet talk him into realizing this would be the best move for his entire family. So Marty just knew the people that he was mentoring. He had personal relationships with them. And that was something that Walt tried to do with his Imagineers as well. Marty actually did tell him, I'm going to choke you out. But it wasn't like choke you out with your hands. It was he's going to make him cry. And he did. He made him cry. He was crying at the end of it. He convinced Roger to go to Walt Disney World and work on One Man's Dream. And Roger from there ended up building this incredible legacy for himself using what he learned from Marty, where he now works in hospitals around the country developing programs that make medicine treatments for children interactive and using virtual reality and stuff so that they're not realizing how much pain they're in because they're going through these different things. And he learned these things through Imagineering. So the realm of things that Marty taught people and how far that exposure has gone into our real world is incredibly touching. In addition to his work at Disney, Sklar authored several books, including Dream It, Do It, My Half Century Creating Disney's Magic Kingdoms, in which he shared insights and stories from his career, his contributions to the world of themed entertainment, and how they continue to inspire and influence Imagineers and Disney fans worldwide, cementing his legacy as a true pioneer in the industry. His impact on Disney parks and the themed entertainment industry at large is profound and enduring, making him a beloved and respected figure among colleagues and fans alike. Even after his passing in 2017, his spirit lives on in the magic and imagination of Disney's enchanting worlds. And that's what I've got on Marty. I put some thought into that.
Covered everything. Sounds like you covered everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Have you guys heard that story about Roger Holzberg and Marty?
No, before? I did not.
No, that's so amazing, though.
I think I still have the original audio from that I could probably pull, or I could get. We'll see if Roger will come on and talk to us. But yeah, his company is called Reimagine Well. And it is incredible. It's all about redesigning treatments in hospitals so that people don't feel so yucky for having to get the help that they need. And I love that. I love that, especially the things that they do for kids. But it's just crazy. No, he's not. He's not in Florida now. But it's crazy how far the realms of Imagineering and Marty's influence reaches out into other aspects of the world. Like now we literally have children going through medical treatments who are experiencing basically things that were sparked and ignited by the magic of Marty and in essence by Walt, because that's where Marty's love for themed entertainment and this kind of storytelling came from. He got it from Walt. So it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful testament. Sorry, I'm blabbering.
No, it's so true though. And I, you know, in doing research for today, there are so many people who have said that Marty is their generation's Walt. And I think that it, you know, might sound a little cliche, but it's true, you know, to your point of Walt saw something in people and knew how to tap into those things to bring out the best in them, even when they might not have known that they possessed those skills. And I think that Marty was the exact same way. And it could have been something that he already possessed those qualities, or I think you're right. I think that he learned a lot of that from Walt because he worked so closely with him for so long. You know, he started a month before Disneyland opened, and you know, Walt handpicked him basically. Yeah, and
I think it goes like he had Walt's heart in him. Absolutely. Like he fully was invested into Walt's vision and carrying that on and making sure that Walt's legacy was known for others. So Walt provided the experience and the opportunity for Marty to become everything that Marty became, which was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And Kevin and I had the opportunity of seeing him at D23 in 2017, right?
I believe it was shortly before he passed away.
Right. At the Legends ceremony. And that was so special. And then, of course, he passed shortly thereafter and made it even more special, you know. But that room was so big. And his presence made it even bigger. You know, he filled that whole space. And I don't think I really appreciated it at the time as much as I should have. But he's definitely a legend.
I was actually lucky enough to talk to Wayne Jackson. That was the Imagineer who was being honored at that award ceremony that Marty Sklar was at. And awesome. Just the amount of respect that man, years later after his death, like he was tearing up talking about Marty and how he was so pivotal to Imagineering being what it is.
Fun fact, have you ever seen Marty's pin hat? Did you know that so he had a hat that he would collect pins in, and people eventually started giving him pins everywhere he went around the world because they wanted their pins to be in his hat. So I think that's kind of one of the like staples of his physical persona was his pin hat. But yeah, like literally he started with newspapers, Disneyland News, and then ended up running all of Imagineering and carrying on the legacy. I don't remember if it was Lewis or Sean that asked recently, if you could have Walt or Marty back, who would you choose? And I said, I would pick Marty. I said, Lewis, was that on Mad Tea Party recently?
It was Mad Tea Party who brought that up. And surprisingly, majority of everybody said Marty. Not surprisingly, like it wasn't like a bad thing, but like that was the majority of us were Marty over Walt.
And I think it's because of the way that Marty was able to carry on Walt's legacy. You felt like you still had parts of Walt there with you. If you had
it's
Marty,
also
you had
Walt. Involved with culture too.
So yeah,
you have the evolution and the past all wrapped in one with him.
Yeah, so it was like you still had bits of Walt when you had Marty. And now I will definitely say that the world, like our Imagineering world and what we know about Imagineering and how things were done and how they're done now. And like this conversation we're having right now where it's like, well, who could we put in that position, you know, and we're having to actually think about it and take 2 weeks to think about it instead of just knowing like in our cores, like who we would want in those roles. If Marty was here, Marty would 110% be the man, you know? We wouldn't have to think about it.
I wouldn't put Marty in mine.
Lewis.
No, wow. I'm being serious. I'm just saying, I think Marty is a great person. I really do. But he's the textbook person of writing Imagineering. I don't know if he's the creative force behind Imagineering. So for that, he's not my top two. He's the puppet by string puller. He's the Walt. He knows who to put where to get the job done, but he's not the one. He's not the Imagineer doing it. Walt had
But as the president of Imagineering, you need to be the string puller. You need to be the puppet master.
Because you have a
chief creative officer.
I would want Marty as CEO, so he's overlooking everything: films, parks, everything. I think it's a waste of talent to put him
but
as the
I
president.
I disagree with that because I think part of what made Marty special was the ability to have those interpersonal relationships that he did. And if you put him in charge of everything, you lose that. So when Walt was still alive, who was it? It was Claude Coates' son was telling me one time that, you know, they would be walking through the park and Walt would just walk through the park with his head down. And he asked his mom, like, "Mom, why does he do that? Like, why can't he stop and talk to us?" And his mom goes, "Honey, he's so busy. He can't stop and talk to us. There's so many things he needs to do." Because when you're CEO, like, you don't have time to build those interpersonal relationships anymore. Walt, as the projects got bigger and bigger and bigger, stopped having the ability to interact with people as much. He stopped having the ability to interact with fans. He stopped having the ability to interact with his Imagineers, which is why he had to put people like Marty in charge. Because he had bigger fish to fry. So I think that you keep Marty in that place where he can have the interpersonal relationships with the creative minds, and then he can pull their puppet strings and put them in the right places.
But just like Walt did to him, he moves up and puts somebody that feels can handle that, and now he's overlooking everything.
But that's what I'm saying is, like, I feel like with, like, Walt had that ability, and then Marty had that ability. And since then, have we had anybody else that's really had that ability?
Iger 1.0. I'm just saying, Iger 1.0.
You think he was great at interpersonal relationships with Imagineers and driving them towards creativity and cohesive blue sky?
Yes.
Meetings.
I mean, I'll
think more about it and I'll reflect on it.
There's that clip in the Imagineering story when, like, he's talking to all the Imagineers around Cars Land, and he's talking about simply the trees, the shading, the shadowing. They're not the shadowing, the shade for people standing there. It's going to be hot. And really looking at the small details that others would overlook because it's not the creative part. It's just
okay, well, let's talk about it. Like, but that's the thing. You move. Okay, well, I guess. So, I mean, he did get moved. But look at him as CEO now. I feel like when you become CEO, you lose the magic.
That's why I said Iger 1.0. Before he became King Iger, I will go Iger 1.0.
I do not hail that king, sir.
That's what I'm saying. Right now, I mean, at Iger 2.0, there's something happened. Something happened during COVID. He must have got it, or he's not real. And, like, he's an alien, like someone killed him and it's an imposter. Just saying. Oh, gosh. Iger 1.0. I'm in.
So Amanda, Kevin.
That's what I'm hearing.
Okay. So something like that. Like, Iger died in 2020 and this is an imposter. Or like the creepy dude off of the first Scooby-Doo. He's in a hole somewhere.
Or the stress is literally destroying
him. The stress, yeah. I mean, if we're going...
That is probably the more likely and practical reason, because the stress, like I said, the stress of being CEO for the Walt Disney Company. Can you imagine?
Nope.
Imagine that.
I would not imagine that. I do not even want to begin to fathom imagining that.
The thought of that gives me extreme anxiety.
I know. I think I just broke out into hives.
I'd be stoked, but I'd be an a-hole. I don't know why made that small of custom.
Louis, you would make it a week and you would start panicking over everything and second-guessing everything that you've done.
So that's how we're gonna. That's how we're gonna do this. We're just gonna be real with that.
Okay. We're gonna crazy. Be real like that. We're right. gonna be real.
Imagine that. I'm just kidding.
No, but anything else you guys want to add about Marty or about any of the comments that were just made before we get into our next break?
Nothing except imagine being the guy that becomes the words for Walt Disney. I mean, that's a statement.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of met Marty. Kind of. So we were in the parks. He was filming something right in front of City Hall. And we were walking by our buddy Ears. Like, "Hey, Louie, that's the guy from the DVD you're watching." And so behind the security, behind all the people and the lights, like, I pointed at him. And I think he waved at me, but I don't think so. So I kind of met him.
Yeah. Almost best friends. Yeah.
If you feel like, I mean, you guys are actually second cousins now.
Yeah.
I think that's how it works.
That works.
I felt like Guillermo on the live musical of Ariel, where he's like there, but not there. If you know what that's from, you're a legend. So, okay, brief story before we go on our break. Guillermo from Jimmy Kimmel, huge fan of him. I want to meet that guy one day. They had him in the live musical of Little Mermaid, and he's the puffer fish on the far left of the screen. He has about a quarter of a second scene, but if you watch the episode of Jimmy Kimmel and you watch that, you know it's him. Yeah, he's there, but he's not, like, there. So that was, like, me meeting Marty. So I was there, but he didn't see me.
We're going to say that he did see you and he waved to you.
I tell myself that. I was like, that was my moment, and I missed
it. Guess what? He's not here to tell people otherwise, so just go with it.
Yep.
It's your claim to fame. There you go, Lou. You got waved up by Marty Sklar.
Yep. There it is.
All right. And with that silly note, we're going to get to our next sponsor break, Getaway Today.
Well, hello, and welcome to Let's Get to Know Our Sponsor. Getaway Today has been helping Disney vacation dreams come true since 1990. Whether you choose to visit the happiest place on earth or travel to Orlando and beyond, they want to help you. Need to know the best hotel in the area? What theme park ticket should you buy? Have a last minute change? No worries. Their travel experts are always here to help. Want to book a cruise and don't know where to start? Hey, they can help with that too. They will help you find the perfect cruise for your vacation, whether it is your first time or you're a well-seasoned cruiser. When you book your cruise with one of the Getaway Today's experts, you will have a dedicated agent to help you every step of the way. They take care of the details so you can have the most fun. Getaway Today has layaway, peace of mind travel, allowing you to cancel or make changes up to 72 hours in advance. You will always have the most up-to-date vacation information, both pre-arrival and upon your welcome. Getaway Today will guarantee the best prices with no hidden fees. And every time you book through Getaway Today, they will donate a portion back to a charitable organization in your area. And so far, over $4.5 million has been donated. So click the link in our show notes to start your Disney vacation planning for more information and the best deals. Tell them Walt's Apartment sent you. And until next time, enjoy the view from Walt's Apartment.
All right. So get you some Getaway Today, as David would say. We appreciate them as our sponsors. Now we're going to do a little bit of reimagining Galaxy's Edge using the first layer of the Imagineering Pyramid that we talked about on last week's episode, which is it all begins with a story, creative intent, attention to detail, theming, and long, medium, and close shots. And we don't have to be super specific into those as long as, you know, we're covering them in our reimagining. So who wants to go first? Well, no one.
Oh, I know. No. I have some ideas, but I'm excited to hear Lou's perspective on how he would reimagine things. Because I know when we first discussed this topic, he was like, oh, man, let's go. So
let's go.
All right, so I'll go first. So story-wise, I mean, I understand the motive they were trying to go with. It's a new area, a new spot. But I think the story for Galaxy's Edge, they went so far out of the box that it doesn't work. I think they should have played to a land, a world, a planet that we are mildly familiar with. Not completely familiar with. You don't need to go to... I am blanking the planet. Luke's planet. It's not Andor. Tatooine. Don't go to something like that where we know where, because then fans are gonna nitpick it. That's not what it would look like. No. You don't want to go to something that we've been to too much. But you go to a planet that we are mildly familiar with. So there's like, okay, I see why they might want this. The story for that, I would definitely bring in a mixture of the original, the prequels, and the prequel trilogy characters, bring it into a world where you would commonly see that. You get rid of the timeline junk. I mean, get rid of it. I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, if you're going to go timelines, I mean, nothing in the park lines up for timelines. It's all about themes. So you get rid of timelines, and the story you go with is your traditional Star Wars story, the dark versus the light, the good versus the bad. Something simple and easy to register for youth all the way up to your senior citizens. Everything. Now, attention to detail. I think attention to detail, they really nailed, but they block you from enjoying those details. I know everyone goes to the Millennium Falcon. Yes, the Millennium Falcon, you get to get up as close as you can to. Cool. That's probably the only thing that's attention to detail you can see. The X-Wing fighter, it's on a platform. The droids are behind walls. The little scrapyard is behind the walls. I mean, everything's behind. Like it's like a futuristic like prison zoo. It's just weird. Like nothing's – I can't enjoy the attention to details unless I'm from a distance, which goes against one of the four rules of Imagineering. You can't go up and touch it. You can't feel the coldness of that metal. You can't feel the roughness of that rock. Get rid of all those gates. Not only that, you give it a timeline, and allows you to allow more characters, more meet and greets. The creative intent on that part, if you're going to build platforms, build areas where you can do meet and greets. They got Kylo Ren's ship that is over there in the back corner on Disneyland side that looks like an abandoned vehicle in the parking lot. There's nothing going on there. It's not used as a stage anymore, except every once in a while. You get Kylo walking through Galaxy's Edge more often than you see him up there. The last time we went, I thought it was a show. Am I wrong? I see faces.
Because yeah. Aaron, yeah, like last time we've been there, it feels like Kylo's always on that stage.
Well, here's the thing. It starts off as a show, and then he walks in through the crowd. So if you miss those 3 minutes, it is literally 3 minutes he is on that stage. There's a little pre-show with some stormtroopers and a guard, and then Kylo comes out, he walks down the little platform, and then he's mixed in with the people. So if you miss that 3 minute window...
Is it the same one that they've had at Hollywood Studios? Like, it used to start...
The one at Hollywood Studios.
Huh? I believe... One,
yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
I wasn't talking about Galaxy's Edge though. They used to have one that started just like in what's the space where the on the boulevard. There used to the space right outside of where like right outside Star Tours. There was
So it's similar to that, but in Galaxy's Edge and a lot shorter of a time frame.
Okay, yeah. But where he was marching with the stormtroopers.
He doesn't even march. He just comes down his ship. So his ship, to Lou's point, is just sitting in a corner. Mm-hmm. And then the ramp is already down. Mm-hmm. The guard talks, saying, hey, we're looking for spies, da-da-da. Kylo comes down the ship, tells the guard he's doing a bad job, and that he's going to do things himself. And then he goes down the ramp to the crowd and mingles with people. That is the show. So
even if he is there, it goes back to my point. It's like the attention to details. It's so small you can miss it.
Yeah.
Like that's not paying any mind anything. The character routes. I thought the character routes, they're predictable, but it's so small. And and not only that, if you are not there in Galaxy's Edge so Ethan really wanted to meet Ahsoka. Even though when he finally saw her, he got cold feet and was like, nope. We were wandering back and forth in Galaxy's Edge around lunchtime when everyone says it's the good chance to see them. Probably for about a good hour and 45 minutes, stalling in stores, stalling in the market, really trying to like, all right, and hanging out right there. There's that center entrance where most of the characters come in and out. She came out. We tailed her for a little bit, trying to convince Ethan to go see her. Maybe 15 minutes. She wandered to almost the entrance of Rise of Resistance, walked back to the marketplace, and walked back into the back entrance. We know the youth want to see these characters. If Mickey could be out there in a costume on Main Street every half hour on the hour.
Mickey's in a costume?
Sometimes. Sometimes.
His outfits, his Halloween ones. Good catch. I see what you did there. Way to go. But if Mickey could be on Main Street for 30 minutes on the hour of every other hour, come on now. Why are these characters, the ones people are flocking to that land to see, out there for a small window? It's the lunch period for a couple of hours.
Well, because they're face characters, they're harder to cast.
I mean, but that's, I mean, is it though? I mean, is it really that hard?
I mean, they can find any 5'4" person to stick in a suit than trying to find someone who can actually put on, who doesn't even have to talk. Whereas having to find somebody who has to interact with their voice as a base character.
Billions of people in the world, they can't find.
They may not be auditioning for the roles.
Or they don't pay well and expect them a lot. But that's not a match.
It goes back to like the Animal Kingdom mentality, though. I think it has a lot of the story behind what happened to Galaxy's Edge was Animal Kingdom, where I know, Lou, you've never been there, but when you get to Animal Kingdom, right when you start, kind of their main street is the Oasis, where you're just walking, where there's some animal habitats, but most of the time there are no animals that you can see there because they chose animals that like to hide. And I remember watching a thing with Joe Rohde talking about how he loves that area of the park because every time you go through, it's going to be different. And if you have the patience to just hang out over there, you're going to see some cool things. But it's going to be on you to have that ability to just slow down instead of just running from one attraction to the other. And I think that was kind of a driving force behind the reason why you had those characters just kind of pop up and disappear.
I don't disagree, except you are charging people astronomical money to get in there. So time is of the essence.
Because if people stay in a land longer because they're waiting on a character to come, guess what? They're spending more money in that land.
Not necessarily.
Or you'll pay to go back because you missed out on that experience.
Yeah. But we're hearing more often than not, people are pissed they didn't get to experience it right then and there, and they already paid that crazy amount of money.
Well, my thing with the characters in particular is back to what I was saying of you have to be there at the right place at the right time, because the last two times that we've been back at Galaxy's Edge, we've seen Boba, we've seen Mando and Grogu, we've seen Ahsoka, we've seen Chopper all at the same time, at the exact same point. They've crossed paths. And then there's been other times we haven't seen anybody. So, like, it doesn't make sense how they have everybody roaming around. It makes sense for Toontown to do that. They all live there. But for this to be Black Spire Outpost, where you have everybody and their grandmother there, the fact that we see four people that we know is weird.
Oh, it is weird. It is weird. And then the fact that you see nobody sometimes.
Yeah.
It just goes to show that they're not paying attention to detail when it comes to their scheduling of their character interactions. Because you could easily stack those characters, give those face characters a break, and keep rotating them throughout the day, and having no more than one out at a time.
And the land is so big, you can space them out. It makes sense to have Chewie over by Millennium Falcon. Okay. You know, I understand that Kylo and the stormtroopers roam around, you know, certain areas. That's great. But to have everybody right at the marketplace right there, that doesn't make sense when there's nobody over at Rise of the Resistance.
Weird.
And I'm all for it. Hey, I get it. You don't get to see the character you want. I've been waiting to see Baloo in the parks. I know it's never going to happen, at least in Disneyland. I mean, for obvious reasons. I mean, but I get it. But to see no characters, I mean, that's the part that really doesn't, I don't get it. Like, I mean, granted, it could be the days of the week, but that we go, that we're just, but again, I mean, that's not the attention to detail. And then the last thing that I feel like they dropped the ball on the creative intent is Smuggler's Run. I feel like Smuggler's Run was a bookshelf attraction. There is really nothing there that they put, I mean, I guess the mechanism to do it, but unless you're into that stuff like we are, the average fan is, this is just a Star Tours 2.0. I get that the kinetics of it is different, but it's a virtual simulator.
Can I be honest? What I personally would rather see inside the Millennium Falcon, a freaking Star Wars museum. I want to be able to see like artifacts from filming from Lucasfilms. Like, that's just me. That's the nerd in me. Honestly, I feel like I would get more out of that than what I get out of the attraction.
If you were to do that though in Disney, you would put those artifacts in the store where they're not so obvious that they're artifacts. But for those fans that like almost hidden Mickeys, put like in the lightsaber shop, like, hey, that one's hanging on the wall. That's a film used prop or certain things like that. If you're going to go Disney, you're going to hide it. Universal, not to give them credit, would give you a museum of here's all the artifacts.
But that's why you have Doc Andor's antiquity shop. Mm-hmm. There are artifacts in there. If you stop to take a look at, the center of the room and do a 360, there's all kinds of hidden Easter eggs in there, to your point. But when I first read that there was going to be an antiquity store, that's the first thing that came to my mind, was something like a Star Wars museum, because the fan base for that would be huge. But going back to Millennium Falcon, for me, that intensifies the theming, because you start at the base level in line for the Millennium Falcon. You have to pass it. So you're like, ooh, okay, what's in there? By the time you get through the line, you're now above the Millennium Falcon. So now you're seeing the top of it. You're seeing a different level of detail that you didn't experience on the first floor. And then the ride itself, you are going into the Millennium Falcon right before you go into like where you sit down and buckle up. You're in the Millennium Falcon. You're in a scene that you've seen in the movies before. Mm-hmm. You know this location. You can sit down and play sabacc. You can do like all these things, but then you go in and you can actually sit and for that brief moment in time, pretend you're Han and Chewie, and all of the details and theming in there. So for me, I have a very different experience with that ride. I understand where you're coming from as far as the actual ride mechanism itself is more of a Star Tours-y type attraction where it's a simulator base, but I come at it from the point of the theming element and the kinetics of it all. So that's my take on it. I'm sorry you don't like the ride.
I've gone on it once and I will never wait in line for it again. That is how I feel about the actual ride. Like, it was not worth it.
Are you an engineer?
I was an engineer.
See, that's the problem. That's the problem. You gotta be a pilot.
I can't. Well, guess what? I don't get to pick if I get to be the pilot. So
when you come down to Disneyland, we'll make sure you're the pilot.
They may screw me and make sure that I'm an engineer again. And I'll be like, you know what? Damn you, Disney. I'm sick of pushing this freaking orange button every time people up front mess up.
Were you the right engineer or the left engineer?
Was the left engineer.
There's one side that's the easier version where there's not as many buttons to push.
The left engineer. I had one button.
See? Did it all wrong.
Well, it depends. So I'm on the left looking forward. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I went where they told me to go.
Yes. Hey, but Rise of the Resistance, hands down, they pulled all the bells and whistles out on that. They, man.
Incredible.
That one is an incredible ride. I thought that would beat out Splash for me. Like, that one was really good. Theming wise, the line queue, the interactions, the surprises. I mean, if Walt was to come back, I'm taking him on that ride.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
He would be so geeked.
Have any of you guys read the comics? The Black Spire Outpost comics?
I have not.
I did.
I haven't either. So when I was going back through, like, it all begins with a story.
Kevin said I did.
They don't really tie in that well to the actual land.
No, but I do like that there is additional material, is what I was getting at. Like, is it 100% accurate to, no, but it's, that's fine. it allows your imagination to go other places.
That's how I feel about the Big Thunder Mountain comic books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I did read that the creative intent behind the land was to create a fully interactive land that felt like a distant and natural part of the Star Wars universe.
Where's the interactive part?
Okay, well, are you done with yours? Because I'll go to magic. Mine, then. That's what I was going to say. But we can make that more immersive, mm-hmm. because we can make it a choose your own adventure type of situation. We can build other storylines into it where we are part of the mission. Like, we're on a mission there. We're there to collect things in Black Spire Outpost. We are there on some like secret job that we're completing. They can create these experiences for us. They already have an app. The magic band is already, like, the RFID chips are already there. They have the ability to do this. We just got to create the stories, and then we get to like play as we are characters in the universe.
Well, they are there. Like, they have the Disney Play app that has a whole like Galaxy's Edge section in it.
They do, yeah, where you can like translate the Erebesh.
Well, you can translate, but also missions that put you on to like go around to different things.
Really?
Yeah.
I miss that.
They have different missions. Like, if you are near the Falcon, mission will pop up if you have the app open, and it'll walk you through different things depending on if you're with the First Order or not or whatever. But to your point, they can expand on that because there's so many different stories you can tell, that, you know.
I don't ever use the app when I'm in the parks.
I was just going to say, but imagine it was like Toontown, where you can hop in all these little ships. There's levers and buttons you can push. The robots, you can hit buttons and they just move and their hands spin, their heads make noises. Like, there's so much missed opportunity for anything outside the app. Like, outside the app, what is there interactive? You can go and look at the Millennium Falcon. They have that one character to your comment about storyline. She's got the blue hair. She's dressed and acts like a normal person in the park. You could almost miss her if she wasn't, like, sliding around and hiding behind things, trying to get people to acknowledge her. Like, who is she? Like, I mean, there's, and then no rides acknowledge her, so you get no kind of surroundings to say who she is. I don't think there's any wanted posters for her. She's just some average Joe playing around in the park.
I think I've missed her. I don't know who that is.
She's the, like, I don't know who she is. I'll pull up a picture, so let me see. And I'll share the screen.
While Lewis is looking for that, I had another idea. That would tie in theming and attention to detail. So, like, what if we had, like, special, like, if we took holidays that they would celebrate on the different planets, and we had them as, like, themed events in Black Spire Outpost?
They do have Life Day, but it's very...
I'm talking about, like, beyond Life Day, like, think about an entire calendar, like a Star Wars holiday calendar type of situation, like of different, like, let's say once a month, maybe they have like 3 or 4 days where they're celebrating a planet from a different holiday or a holiday from a different planet. Like think about how we would celebrate. Huh?
Do you have any examples of these?
No, I'm not. I mean, I didn't go that far into it, but like the way we celebrate Christmas, obviously they don't celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, they have Life Day for Christmas.
Okay. And then, like, do they have like a Halloween type situation? Do they have anything else they celebrate other than Life Day? No.
Isn't the whole like story of Black Spire like has a bunch of people? Oh yeah, I don't know who that is.
Exactly.
She's there and nobody knows who she is because nobody paid attention to detail and included her in the storyline.
Yeah. But the point of the Black Spire Outpost is that these are people from all sorts of different areas. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the marketplace is an example of everybody coming together. Mm-hmm. And like commingling with each other, but
Are we seeing those different cultural aspects from the different planets being on display in the Black Spire Outpost? Like, you can tie in all of the different planets. Like, you should be able to learn about all of the different planets specifically. You should be able to learn the cultural aspects, be able to see, like, what they have that is special. So that's what I'm saying. Like, on those other planets, are there other holidays? Are there themed events? Are there special things that they celebrate? Could those things be written into a storyline? Yeah. Kevin's making faces.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, personally, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking kind of like Lou was saying, I'd want to have like worlds that I'm used to, you know, not just give me weird holidays that don't exist in the Star Wars storyline already. But you're creating
a new experience. That's what I'm saying. Like, but, well, they would have to inform it somehow, obviously, yes. So here you go, Lucasfilms. I need you to start writing holidays into the shows so that we can start celebrating them in the parks. Thank you. If you didn't hear that, I will.
Even outside of Christmas, though, I mean, they could do something. You know, they have Season of the Force. They could have done, like, you know, like during Halloween. Make it all very, like, the dark side. Have Maul. Turn the mountains red. I mean, where you're like, oh, damn, you know, have some effects on the Millennium Falcon where it's sparking.
That's what I'm trying to get to is, like, make it so that you have different experiences throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
I mean, not only that, you can have moments where it's like, hey, this season where, like, it's the Black Spire, but you could have, like, throwback night. You could do the Black Spire Outpost during the era of, like, Vader and stuff like that. So then you have those characters and you decorate it to where, hey, it's this era of the Black Spire Outpost, because obviously it's been there forever. You have it to where it's an era of Vader walking around. You have, like, the OG stormtroopers coming around, not the Kia Soul looking ones. You have R2-D2 coming around. You have, you know, all of those things where it's like that era. And then, like, you change up, but it could be like a Star Wars Eras night where
it could be like Ladies Night, where you get all the ladies. Just kidding. All the girls met in the Black Spire Outpost for a drink. Just kidding.
But you could do that. I mean, there's so many things that they could do there, and it's just not being. I mean, it's fully immersive to a fault.
Also, one time. Oh, another thing. I would love to have the temple and Jedi training. I know it wouldn't work in Black Spire Outpost, but I would love that somewhere. We don't have Jedi training. Jedi training could, but the temple wouldn't. But I just want to see the temple. Like, so just give us a Star Wars land. Thank you, Fifth Gate. But like, not even Jedi training per se. Because we used to have that. They got rid of it. But, like, what about lightsaber training? Like, you have the lightsaber experience, but do you actually get the same training experience that they were providing on the Star Cruiser?
Oh, here we go.
So they had, like, a training experience that was part of the Star Cruiser. Why couldn't they bring that into the land?
I mean, where would you put it, though? Because right now there's not a whole lot to do anything like that.
That's up for Bruce Vaughn to figure out now.
The great now that since you mentioned him, I'm going to bring it up because he was the CEO and CCO of Dreamscape Immersive, where he worked with teams to advance virtual reality technologies. So I can totally see
down for more VR.
And the kids already had the VR thing as they're doing their lightsaber training. I'm saying.
It was just a blast shield, wasn't it? Anyway, that's fine. I don't know. I like Lou's idea of being able to go back in time a lot. Like, the more I think about this, the more I think that we need that. I just don't know what they do with the Millennium Falcon and what they do with Rise of the Resistance during those overlays.
Well, I mean, Rise of the Resistance, I mean, obviously...
They turn the lights off.
The rides themselves would stay the same. I mean, Throwback Night, I mean, Snow White...
Don't they have cloaking technology at this point?
There is no Falcon.
Yeah. No, the Falcon, you could sit there and, like, I mean, do
it's an old ship, so we could say it's from, you know, like, it's like someone else's ship in the back in the day.
Yeah, or you add the attachment from Lando when he had it. You add that attachment to the front of it to give it that throwback look of before they launched it off. Like, you add that to it. I'm sure they can create that where it's just like some foam. If they can recreate Haunted Mansion in 2 weeks, they could readjust the Flat Falcon.
You know something else that I want, though? So one time Joey and I had an episode, I think it was Joey and I, where we discussed three things that had been discussed for the land that never made it to the land. And one of them was a bantha that walks through the streets. It's like a robotic bantha that, like, goes through Galaxy's Edge. Obviously, it would have a handler that, like, would lead it and get people out of the way. It would probably need a couple of handlers. How cool would it be to have a bantha going down the street? Or what if you could, like, ride a bantha?
No, I was going to say, you have but you have a bantha with a cruiser behind it. So it's, like, floating in a way, but you're riding that cruiser or a little wagon.
Like, you know how they pick, like, the mayor of Main Street? Like, where they pick the honorary person for the day. What if they picked a kid to ride a dang bantha every half hour or so? Or, like, every hour? How cool would that be?
That would be pretty cool, but you're probably facing a lot of liabilities because now your kid's, like, 8 feet in the air.
Strap him.
Be baby bantha.
Oh, a little baby bantha petting zoo?
Because his kid isn't able to go on it, so. Every time I'm in Galaxy's Edge, I can't get on the bantha, is what Lou's going to say when that happens. So,
wouldn't that be so cool, though? Like, wouldn't that make you feel like you're really, like, in a different land? There's this giant bantha walking down the road.
It would be cool. But, I mean, also, too, what happened to, like, all the... I mean, I could be missing it. I mean, it seems like everybody else has better experiences than I do. But wasn't there supposed to be, like, a lot of, like, up in the sky, like, sounds and, like, fighting and, like, a lot more, like, letting you know that this is an active outpost? I mean, sounds it doesn't look very active.
That is one of the complaints about it, is that when you are around the Falcon, say, there are sounds of things flying overhead, things landing. You get that with Docking Bay 7 as well. But it seems to just be there, and you're not seeing anything move. You're not seeing anything like flying around or shadows of things.
It's all audio.
Yeah, there's no attention to detail there.
Another recent complaint too is that I've heard and I would change is there's a little restaurant popcorn stand in the marketplace, and it is consistently vacant and open. Like, there's nothing that was there, or like. And they treat it like a churro cart. If it's not busy that day, they don't open it. And it's like, why would you put that there? That just looks like poor planning. Not only at the market, I mean, it has a bunch of little shops, but the merch in Galaxy's Edge, there's not a whole lot that I'm like, I need to have that.
I agree.
It's just like, oh, that's cool.
I think the only thing that I've ever bought in Galaxy's Edge, other than experiences, like we've built a droid and stuff, but which is great, like building a droid, building a lightsaber, those are great experiences, but Haley has the little Porg, the little magnetic Porg that sits on your shoulder
pads.
obsessed. She lost one and I had to order another. I had to order two more. It was a whole thing, so now she has three of them.
Another cool thing is they enclosed the marketplace, put a digital roof on it so you can change like the weather looking, or like have like you got like virtual ships flying over, so you kind of get that.
I was just thinking that when Amanda was talking about, I was like, well, they can do that with like mirrors and like interactive screens and stuff. I was thinking about the in Vegas Fremont Street experience. I was like, if they can do it, if they can do it half-ass in Vegas, they can definitely do it in Disney.
Well, I was thinking of going back to Universal at Hagrid's Motorbike Adventure. The section of the ride right before you board is, you know, dragons roaming around and the motorbike and all kinds of sounds and stuff going on up there that you don't see. It's all audio and the visual.
Okay. Yeah, but the shadows are being cast. Right?
Yes.
You see the shadows of where they are, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So something like that, I totally agree. I mean, the ceiling of the marketplace is really great, but I think adding that element to it would make it even better, especially at night.
Yeah.
I think that kind of goes back to, I feel like Galaxy's Edge was a victim of them trying to not be Universal Studios. Because you could tell that the idea of a whole land based off of one IP kind of came from Harry Potter, even though Bugs Land predates it. But Harry Potter came out, was like, hey, we're going to go all in on one IP. You're going to live through this world. And it was amazing. It was gangbusters. Everyone went there. It did great for them. So they're like, hey, we can do that too, but we can't do it the same though, because if we just pick a world of Star Wars, it'll look like we are copying them. So we're going to do it our way, where we're going to make the story because that's what we do, or it's going to be something that you've never seen before. And I think that may have kind of, I think they went a little in over their heads kind of quickly on it. That's my opinion. And that's the reason why you have some of that.
And speaking of Bruce Vaughn, I think Galaxy's Edge is a perfect example. Is you can spend too much and do too much to where you've done so much that there's, as horrible as it's going to sound, you've done so much there's nothing here to do. Like, you've paid so much attention to trying to sell something that I think they missed the mark. Like, Galaxy's Edge as an art piece is beautifully done. It looks gorgeous. But there's nothing in there that's like, hey, let me go to Galaxy's Edge. Besides Rise of the Resistance, I will stand in a 2-hour line for that ride. As long as I have a water and they have those space fans on, I'm in.
Yeah. Well, like Kevin and I were talking about before we recorded, that I think they did themselves a disservice for doing California and Florida at the same time. Like, had they did everything that they needed to do in Florida, like 120%, give it all they had with the budget that they had, see how it goes, plus it. And to Sam's point from the other day, you don't need to go to Hollywood Studios for Galaxy's Edge. You got one here. It's the exact same thing. There's nothing new over in Florida that we don't have here in California. So I think that had they just focused on Florida, make that a beautiful experience, work out all the kinks, see how it does. If it explodes, then awesome, bring it over to California. But until then, keep it in Florida. They could have had a lot more money put into it and it could have been better.
Yeah, and then you have the space that you have in other parks to have new experiences and to use your creative minds that are some of the best in the world to let them actually create new lands and to tell new stories, to create more immersive experiences. You don't need the same land on both coasts, in my opinion.
Yep, 100%. One thing that we hadn't really touched on was the long, medium, and closed shots. That is the biggest issue I have with Galaxy's Edge. The biggest issue, because from the parking structure, that is a bigger, I know we're not talking about weenies this episode, but like that draws you in more than anything that you actually have in the park walls, mm-hmm. in the berm, because you can't see it. You don't know it exists from any of the three points at Disneyland to enter into Galaxy's Edge. You don't know it's there. And I think that is part of the problem. Like, if you don't know, you can spend your entire week at Disneyland and not see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that actually goes back to Marty Sklar's One Little Spark book, where he goes through his mouse cars and goofs. He actually talks about Animal Kingdom being a goof, being a mistake, the way they designed it to be a place that you go and explore. You know, where I guess it was worse when it first opened, where everything was around a corner. You can never actually tell where you were going until you got there. And it feels like Galaxy's Edge really embraced that same concept of, like, you're going to go here and you're not going to know what's ahead of you until you round that corner. Then it's going to be a surprise and it's going to be awesome. But for some people who aren't out there looking for a surprise, they might never find things. And that's
part honestly, of it gives me anxiety. I do not feel it. No, not like not trying to find it, just like being like, I personally don't feel like the the long, medium, and close shots are done well in Galaxy's Edge. I don't feel like there's anything really pulling me to the next location. The organization is just for my brain is like, but that's how the Black Spire outposts would be. It would be chaos. So for some people that works, but my brain is just a little different and that's okay. For me, it's not like it doesn't have this organization. Like Toy Story Land, I feel like does a great job with the long, medium and close shots at Walt Disney World. You are literally being pulled from one spot to the next and it's clear and it's concise and you see where the next attraction is. You see where the next shop is. You see where the next restaurant is. You're being pulled through those consistently. I do not have that vibe in Galaxy's Edge. It's very, everything is everywhere and it's overwhelming. Like you said, you're turning corners and you're like, well, what's going to be down this way? And what's going to be down this way? And what's going to be down that way? And I know that theme wise and part of the storytelling, it makes sense that the Black Spire Outpost is that way because that's how buildings were structured. But for me, my brain, it just doesn't help my brain.
Well, I mean, I think that it's interesting because like Pandora is the same way in that you are in a world that you've never been in before, mm-hmm. and you have things in the trees. You hear animals walking through the trees, but you never see them in both places. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel that sense of anxiety that you're experiencing in Pandora.
I don't either. I love Pandora. I literally take everything in and I'm like, this is the best thing ever. Love Pandora.
Pandora has the floating rocks up there, the floating mountains that kind of, they help you know where you are. It's kind of like Walt's explanation of the castle needs to be big. So when you're anywhere in the park, you can kind of know where you are. So that way you don't get lost.
So is there something that they could have done to give us that medium shot?
Maybe a bigger Black Spire? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But like just more consistent medium shots that take you to the next spot, I guess.
I think Galaxy's Edge has solid, I almost say Guardians of the Galaxy. I think Galaxy's Edge has the medium shots are decent, at least in Disneyland. Like there's never a point where I don't know which way I'm headed. But the short and long shots aren't there. I don't think so. I feel like the short shots are hit and miss. Or not executed well.
The short shots, though, you are saying, like, I agree with you, that why do we need these droids behind ropes? Why do we need these things where kids cannot go up and interact with them? All right, like,
you think of back to Universal Studios, because what we do here, we're in the park. The line for the Mario Kart ride. There's this little spot in the line where there's this really cool display where it's like paper cutouts where they open the ride up and within like a week, they put this huge cage over it. And everyone online was like, why do we have a huge cage over this thing where in Japan it's been open for a year and a half without that? And they're saying that here in America, you have people who want to touch and destroy things when they're within arm's reach. So you have to protect it with something. Which might be part of the issue that we have with Galaxy's Edge.
I mean, I don't disagree there. I mean, obviously, look at Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. I mean, there's concession stand items always missing. And it sucks. Everyone's trying to get a piece of something to sell on eBay. But I really like, for Galaxy's Edge, the robots can have just basic push buttons where you're getting different sounds and stuff like that. It doesn't have to be super small. But you go like the Toontown vibe. Look at the mailboxes in the post office in Toontown. Simple. You pull it, you hear that person's voice. Look at the freaking crazy artistic mailbox in Goofy's kitchen. The piano. There's so many little things at the piano bridge that they could have did in Galaxy's Edge that allowed some type of interaction, and they didn't do that. Especially the Droid Depot. That's a missed opportunity right there. The little garage center that has literally no meet and greets or anything like that, just there. You could have had that to be a little photo op. If they could have 1,000 kids a day go and sit in Dumbo and take a picture, they could have did that little pod racer right there. Go get in there. The teacup sees more rears than anybody in an average day of Disneyland. Not a single thing in Galaxy's Edge that has ships that you can take pictures in allows you to do that.
There's one outside of Droid Depot, but that's fine.
What's that?
There's one outside of Droid Depot.
That you can sit in and take a picture?
Yeah. It's between Droid Depot and Sam's Workshop.
Where?
But anyway, to your point, that garage that you're talking about that has like the catwalk that sometimes Ray and Chewie are on. Absolutely. I think that had they opened that up, there's plenty of space to bring the vehicles out a little bit. I mean, Universal has that with their little mopeds in Paris, like in the Paris street. And there's people sitting there all the time. To your point, that would be a great photo op. Super easy to do. I don't know why they don't do that.
I'd just be where Imagineering hits operations, where you have people who have to maintain those things getting upset, saying, no, we don't want to have that liability on our hands. But that's just my speculation.
I don't disagree, but then I go back to Dumbo. I mean, Dumbo's there. You can sit on Dumbo all day.
Mm-hmm. He has less small parts, though, than most of the droids and spaceships.
But then that goes against the creative intent. You're not paying attention that, hey, what we're building is something for youngsters, adults, senior citizens, all in the middle to come on here, snap a few photos, and then bounce off.
Yeah, personally, I would have preferred if the Star Wars land was just like you were saying, where you don't have to choose a land. Just have it where it's just a whole Star Wars land. I think of like the way they redid the castle over in Hong Kong, where it's just an amalgamation of different princess castles, you know? And just have it where it's all just a bunch of different Star Wars stuff as you walk through there. You don't know what you're walking past. Like, there's a Hoth spot. There's a Tatooine spot. You have the towering city of Coruscant there. Why not?
You can do Hoth during the Christmas time. We have a Hoth layover. Have those giant llama things running through the park. I don't know, they're really
didn't need to have such a fixed story, which I think is part of the problem as well. No, you can have everything. Anything that's Star Wars related, you can have it come up and just pop up for no reason whatsoever because it is Star Wars land, and that is what it is.
You could have a Redwood Creek Challenge, and that could be the Ewoks planet. Yeah.
Right. Endor play zone all day long. Why not?
Oh,
that would be amazing.
It wouldn't conflict with the story because you don't have it where you're stuck to. There's a story. It's just Star Wars land. You can do whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. And then you still stick to your creative intent because you're creating interactive experiences. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the storytelling is, as far as being able to beginning with a story, your story is you are exploring the different galaxies. You're exploring the different planets. In the galaxy.
A little like you're going through a warp speed or whatever they call it in this thing. What's it called? Jump into hyper speed or something?
Hyper speed.
Yeah, hyper speed. So just have like those lines on the walkways that act like, you know, when you go between one spot to another, you just hyper
speed. Moving walkways in.
Yeah, not a big deal.
Those are dangerous. I feel like those would be dangerous with a lot of children at Disney, like in an actual park. I know we use them between parks and stuff, but like, that would be dangerous. Yeah. But people should be responsible. People should be responsible for their own children. So maybe just hold on to your child's leash a little tighter. I'm just kidding.
No. Wow. Anyway, I was picturing having like a world's fair of sorts where like the different galaxies bring in like the best of the best to show other galaxies what their world is doing.
So the opposite of the Black Spire Outpost, where it's kind of cringe, like shady business.
Yeah.
Bring the best instead of your worst.
There it is. I like this. Instead of a World's Fair, it's like a Galaxy's Fair.
It's a Galaxy's Fair.
Yeah.
That's the new name of the land, the Galaxy Fair. Galaxy's Fair.
Galaxy Fair. Princess Galaxy Fantasy Fair. You got Galaxy Fair. It all works.
It just makes sense.
It does.
Then you're not ever.
Imagine that. One
thing. Imagine that. All right, Disney, we fixed your problem. So
you owe us, over to you owe us some big checks, and we want Banthas too.
maybe Bantha Petting Zoo, please.
Yeah, that'd be tight.
Nice. Can they get Tauntauns in there too? That'd be great.
Can you imagine? They could do it. It could be a galaxy petting zoo where everybody brings their little their big animals from their land.
Over their planet. Yeah, that makes sense.
From their planet. They already had animals back there before with the Big Thunder Ranch.
Yeah. And you can just get animals and like attach like some like pieces to them. You get like little horses and then add like four unicorn horns down the middle. So it's like those little attachments where they're like real animals.
A little bit of glue, not a big deal.
Huh?
Just a little bit of glue, not a big deal.
No, like a strap on.
Okay. Never mind. I'm trying to get you some angry letters.
You know what's a character they need to have is a meet and greet that I think will set Star Wars fans over the top and excited? Jar Jar Binks.
I would totally meet Jar Jar Binks.
I would be down. Imagine petting a baby Gungan.
That might be. I don't think it's just a pet baby Gungan. They're people too.
Yeah, they're people. That might be inappropriate.
Why do they not have Jar Jar?
Because
he's like.
Yeah, I know they should.
He's becoming a cult classic now. Like for the longest time, everyone hated Jar Jar, and now he's like a thing.
He is because he's annoying, but like you need his annoyingness. Like it makes it. We need Jar Jar. Even though he's annoying, he's like the fun kind of annoying now.
He was like my favorite character in the first one. And then he became like royalty out of nowhere.
It was a senator or something.
Weird things happen. Well, you could have Senator Jar Jar. You could have Senator Jar Jar as the leader over the Galaxy Fair. Yeah. Don't do that. I'm just kidding. That would be awful storytelling. But
all I picture is
you do it right.
All I picture was like Quasimodo, the King of Fools, you know? Jar Jar Binks being that guy, like, isn't serious. Some topsy-turvy fair.
Everything would be backwards and misconstrued and chaos, but it's okay.
That's very true.
All right, I think that's all
of our ideas, but yeah.
Yeah. I think that's all we have for this episode of Imagine That. You guys have anything else you want to share before we close it out?
No.
We covered a lot.
A lot of fun, guys.
Yeah. Join us.
Works in the next episode.
Yes. Not next week, but the following week. We are going to be talking about the second tier of the pyramid, which is weenies, transitions, storyboards, pre-shows, and post-shows. So we'll see you next time on Imagine That.
Come to this happy place. Welcome. Disneyland is your land. Here age relives fond memories of the past. And here youth may savor the challenge and promise of the future. Disneyland is dedicated to the ideals, the dreams, and the hard facts that have created America. With the hope that it will be a source of joy and inspiration to all the world.